Friendly competition inside the Civic Media network of our hosts. As we know, I'm a very competitive person. You know how competitive I am? Prick me to start giving blood. They tell me that there has been a contest to see who can give, who can fill up their bag the fastest. 5 minutes, 4 seconds. I got done and I said, did I win? And they said, you were the fastest all day.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time. This is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Hello, Wisconsin!
Hello, Wisconsin. Welcome to the second hour, the noon hour of As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. You got Jane Madnair on the board. Thank you for joining us today during your lunch hour. And we got two great guests in the second half of this hour at 12:30. We have representatives from the Main Street Alliance. Sean Fetteplace has been on here before, but they have a day of action coming up in February 13th. And Main Street Alliance is basically an organizing firm to try to bolster the power that small businesses, and obviously they're a nationwide organization, but Sean works here, and the day of action is going to be in Madison and really focusing on the Wisconsin members. So we're going to learn more about that. But to start off with this hour, our friend, our colleague, who's now 3 months in. The last time we had him on the show, he had not started his show yet, and now he is a veteran. But Mr. Todd Alba of the Todd Alba Show joins us today. How are you doing, sir?
Well, you're too kind. I'm doing well. It's great to see both of you via the old Zoom here. Great to talk to you. Great to talk to your audience. And we're settling in little by little, finding our way, but certainly feel better about things than the last time I was on the show.
It gets easier, right?
Yeah. I mean, you get more comfortable. like I had been out of radio for, I don't know, 15 years or so. Yeah. And it takes a little while to get back behind the mic, kind of get the voice back in the groove, kind of get the flow of things back. But we're getting there.
You're getting
there. With the help of everybody like you all.
For what it's worth, I feel like even taking the weekend off, I come in Monday and I feel rusty. So right. I'm like, how do I do this again? By Friday, yeah. I'm like, oh, this is easy. Phone it in. But then it's
but I always feel,
a restart.
Well, as long as I actually get some sleep over the weekend, I always feel better on Monday. Like, oh, I actually am kind of awake today.
Yeah.
Versus by Thursday or Friday, I'm just like, you know, rolling my eyes to have extra coffee or whatever.
Extra coffee, which we found out. Did you hear that K-cups are actually better for the environment, apparently, than a pot of coffee? I'll send you the article.
Wait a minute. Did you do this on the show? Because I listened like the last half hour. Was this like earlier today?
This was yesterday. This is a callback to yesterday. I'll send you the article offline because you're here to talk about something entirely different.
All right. Well, I'll be very interested to look at that.
So you have been talking about this on your show for a while, and I think you also almost broke this story because you got information kind of before a lot of the other outlets did. You're from Richland originally.
I am.
Yep. Richland Center. And shout out to everyone listening in Richland Center right now. But there has been controversy or anger, a debate over what is happening with the UW Richland satellite campus. And so I'm not gonna put you've been the one who has been talking about this for months now, so kind of give us the background of what's happened up until what the debate is now.
Sure. So there are 13 two-year, they used to be called center campuses, two-year satellite campuses throughout the state. There are 13 four-year institutions as well, and UW Richland, it got lumped in back in 2018 with the merger of the two into the four-year campuses. Back in 2018, Richland got put with UW-Platteville, which is in the southwest part of the state. So back on Thanksgiving week back in November, new president of the UW system, Jay Rothman, put out an edict, a release, saying due to low enrollment, he ordered interim chancellor at Platteville, Tammy Ivedovich, to close. They couched it with language that they were going to suspend all in-person academic classes at Richland, essentially closing the campus, and that they would put together a new plan to what the future would hold for the Richland campus, which would be released on January 15th. However, they never solicited any local input from the Richland campus, never came to Richland Center. The new president, Jay Rothman, who took over from former president Tommy Thompson, has never been to Richland Center, to the Richland campus.
Yikes.
And just put, and I think the interim chancellor, because the old chancellor, Dennis Shields, left in June. That's a whole another situation there. there is allegedly a missing $1 million from the Platteville Foundation Fund in Platteville, which has never been fully addressed. And that's kind of the cloud that the former chancellor left under. And so the new chancellor, Ivetovich, only came to Richland, I think, once, never consulted locally on this. But here's the real thing that your listeners should understand. This is not a Richland Center or Richland campus problem. Because, and I know your show goes all over the state, in Waukesha, UW-Waukesha is a satellite campus now in Milwaukee, in addition to Washington County. You've got Whitewater and the satellite campus there of Rock County. Up in Green Bay now, played over Green Bay, Marinette, Manitowoc, and Sheboygan are affected by this as well. Because our state senator from Southwest Wisconsin, Howard Markline, happens to be the co-chair of the Joint Finance Committee, the committee that writes the budget. Basically, the co-chairs are known as the third most powerful people in state government in the legislature behind the Senate Majority Leader and the Speaker of the Assembly. So on our sister station, WRCO, Ron Fruit's morning show, had on Howard Markline, because he won't come on my show. Had Howard
Why
Markline,
would he come on your show?
I wondered. But he said, as well as Tony Kurtz, also a representative Republican that sits on the Joint Finance Committee, they said that this most likely will not be the last campus that's looked at closing. And not only two-year, but four-year campuses. So everybody in this state that has a four-year or a two-year institution in your community should be put on notice that this is coming to you. And here's the real kicker, Kristen and Jane, that although the president of the system, Rothman, uses this low enrollment as a reason, because yes, back in 2015, the enrollment at Richland was 560 some odd students. Today, it's 60, 60. But guess what? Guess what?
What?
The state revenue, the support for the Richland campus, decreased 28% between from 2015 to 2016, and it's decreased ever since. So the amount of money the state is putting into the satellite campus at Richland Center keeps going down. They've lost the recruitment director. It's never been put back there. They've lost faculty that haven't been replaced due to retirement. Get this, the local foundation, the private community foundation, Richland Center for the campus, had $600,000 plus in their budget. They went to Platteville, their mothership campus, and said, look, we'll use $600,000 of private money we already have to finance and pay for a full-time recruiter. And Platteville said, no, you can't do it.
Why?
That's the reason we keep asking. And no one will give us the response to that. So between state revenue, and I apologize, I get a little revved up on this.
No, I mean, you've been covering it in detail, so you obviously know. I didn't know that this is... And I have so many more questions. So we're talking to Todd Alba from the Todd Alba Show, which is on the Civic Media Network. You can hear him before me from 8 to 11. And we're talking about the UW satellite campus issues. It has started with UW Richland. Mm. And I didn't know that this is a potential of like the pilot before, or the, as we said already, the canary in the coal mine as far as what this could mean for other campuses.
I mean, and the chairman of the Joint Finance Committee, the co-chairman, Howard Markline, is on tape through our sister station, WRCO Richland Center, Ron Fruit, the longtime host of the morning show. Howard Markline said this will not be most likely the first closure or the last closure of a two-year campus in the state, and also could very likely affect four-year campuses across the state.
And is he part of, because I always hear of Steve Nass being the anti-UW system person in the legislature. And so is this guy kind of in that same vein of... let's drown the UW system, or is this is there any benefit of the doubt that we could give as far as we have a declining across the board? You know, Madison being the only campus that is actually growing in enrollment for a variety of reasons. But is there any argument as far as consolidating campuses because of resources, because there's just not the demand that there once was, or is this a bad faith argument?
Well, I think it's a little bit of both, if you want to just play it right down the middle. We had on our program, we actually originated our show back November. We did a live show on location at Richland Center, and we tracked down former, because the 13 two-year centers used to be their own entity. They had their own chancellor, and it was Ray Cross at the time, before he moved on and became president of the system. And And then after he became president of the system, a woman by the name of Kathy Sandine became the chancellor of those two-year entities, as well as extension. We had her on our show, and she confirmed, never before had talked about this, that she had put together a plan to address what you said, Kristen, is that yes, higher education is changing, and we kind of have to move with the times. So she put together a comprehensive plan that would have kept all 13 two-year campuses intact. She hired a professional marketing company out of Madison. They put together an entire marketing plan called UW Here, specifically for the 2 years. It was all put together, how you adapt, how you change, how you move forward. Ray Cross, when he was president of the system, killed it. Never let it be even shown to the Board of Regents. Killed it. And shortly thereafter, he put out the edict that his plan was to consolidate the 2 years back with the 4 years, but there was never any plan. The plan was simply just put them back with the 4 years. And so the argument or the thesis here is that the Republicans in the state legislature are literally setting up our higher education units to fail. And to your question, yes, the Senator Nass has been a longtime critic and is I won't get into it, but his main staffer, Mike Mickelson, is a piece of work in the.
Despite having the benefit of not only an undergrad but also a master's from the UW system,
right?
Whatever.
And I can tell you stories about Steve Nass from Republican conventions in Green Bay when I used to be a Republican, but I won't right now. But the fact is that it's not just Nass who's been very outwardly about this. Now you've got guys like Mark Lyne who are kind of mealy mouthed, not real excited. But you tell me, Kristen and Jane and your listeners, why would Republicans be setting up a UW system for failure when they want more jobs in this state? And the UW system has proven that they are a jobs machine. Could it maybe be that Howard Markline wants a position in state government, say, working for the university system? Because he only makes 50 grand right now, and most of these UW system jobs pay well over 100. And remember, the way retirement systems work in Wisconsin, your state retirement is based on your last 3 years of service, or if you're grandfathered in, your three highest earning years. So wouldn't it be convenient if Howard Markline, who just got reelected in a couple of years, decided to hang it up and got a job in state's government?
Oh, all right. Well, we're going to keep Todd Alba here to talk a little bit more about this topic. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
You are listening to As Goes Wisconsin, a product of Civic Media. Enjoy it live across Wisconsin, Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. until 2 p.m. Find your local station on our website, civicmedia.us, or on the Civic Media app, and catch any of your favorite shows as a podcast wherever you listen.
As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. Our guest this half hour is Todd Alba of the Todd Alba Show on the Civic Media Network. He is on 8 to 11 Monday through Friday, but he is here because a story that's near and dear to his heart that he's been covering in a lot of detail is what's happening with the UW Richland closure, the campus over that is connected to the Platteville campus, and kind of the happenings, I would say, and the conversations that have been happening, and maybe the people who were trying to save it being silenced or shut down. And so as far as the argument to fight for these satellite campuses, who does this benefit? Who do these serve, and why is it important to continue to have them be a resource and available for people to attend?
So full disclosure, the Richland campus and the UW system has been a part of my life literally since I can remember. because my grandmother, Marge Wallace, was president of the Richland County Teachers College, that was called that at the time back in the 60s. And then she helped to start, and was one of the founders of the UW-Richland campus. And she was the first dean, the first woman to serve as a dean in the UW system in the state of Wisconsin. And so I remember literally just running around the halls of the campus when I was a kid, and then ended up going there as a student before I transferred and finished up at Platteville. But the argument when these started was that people in the rural parts of the state were more likely to have accessibility to higher education if they could live at home the first 2 years. And maybe for some folks, an associate degree is all that they need. And let's be honest, a higher education is not for everyone. Mm-hmm. I mean, the technical colleges, military, going right into the workforce, there's a lot of wonderful and honorable trades that you don't necessarily need a college degree for. But by and large, it's still believed that a college education for most folks, or many folks, will help you attain a better job, better opportunities moving forward. So the thought was, why should these opportunities only be afforded to the most urban people in our state? Why not take these quality higher education issues to the more rural areas of our state? Again, the Wisconsin idea, the borders of our state are the borders of the university. And then secondarily, affordability. If you can live at home, or if you have lower cost classes, that saves money, again, making it easier for people on lower incomes to have a quality education.
Which makes total, I mean, and I, trust me, as we've talked to Morna Foy, who's the president of the Wisconsin Technical College System, I totally agree as far as the ability to transfer, the ability to reduce costs, like more options. And I think one of the things she said, and obviously this is a different system, the system that she's the president of is companions and can partner with the UW system, but it's different, is the why their enrollment numbers are up is because of their efforts to meet students where they are and have the flexibility that you're talking about with the UW system of people who maybe, especially if the family farms that we still have, right? People who have to still help at home, right? And are sometimes forced to make the choice between going to school or helping at home because the closest UW campus is too far. And so as far as with the time that we have left, is there anything that people who care about this issue can do? Is there any public comment sessions that are happening? Or is this just a bug your people who aren't always that responsive situation?
No, for your listeners who are listening in Richland County, Richland area, there's a town hall coming up sponsored by the Save Our Campus Foundation and also the local county board, who have voted 18-0 to support the campus and to try to keep it there. So the town hall coming up this Thursday, January 26th, from 6:30 until 8:15 at the UW-Richland campus, the Pippin Conference Center. Also, you can call in no matter where you are in this state. Call, write in, email. Tell your local elected official, higher education, the UW system is important to me. I don't want this closed. I want funding. And remember, Kristen, there's a $7 billion budget surplus here. Mm-hmm. So it's not like there's not money here. I want to give a shout out, if we could, to the Valley Sentinel. It's a really small independent newspaper in Southwest Wisconsin, Spring Green. I'm going to have the co-founders and editors, Taylor Scott and Nicole Amani, on our show on Thursday. And they wrote a great editorial as to what's really going on here. I'm just going to read a couple of sentences real quick. The 1966 agreement, which my grandmother helped write, specifically lays out the UW system's obligation to maintain the campus and to provide adequate instructional administrative staff. The only way the agreement can be terminated is in June, if any given year, A, the legislature fundamentally changes how the branch campus operates, 2, if the legislature doesn't provide adequate funding. Notice there's no and or in there. So the thinking is that the legislature is trying to run out the clock until the 30th of June, where they'll simply say, whoops, there's no more funding. So there is what they're looking at now is filing a lawsuit to stay this action until this can be cleared up.
That's super interesting. You have to send me all of that so I can put it in our show notes for today, because it seems like there's a lot here, but there's also nothing to final necessarily, is what you're saying.
There's still a chance. A joint finance Howard Markline, if he wants, could put a line item in here to save the campus like that, although he denies it. I mean, my former boss Dale Schultz was on JFC. You could do that. You could do that. He just doesn't want to. And also, the lack of transparency and honesty from UW's system is astounding.
Yeah.
It also sort of seems like there are people who believe that fewer educated people are a good thing.
100%, Jane. 100%. I mean, I'll tell you from having been in the halls and the rooms of Republicans, there is an actual war on higher education in general. They resent it. They absolutely resent it.
Well, and now that we only have a minute left, I feel like that just opened a can of worms that we're going to have to bring you back and talk about, because I feel like you have insight that someone like me does not, as far as privy to those conversations. Todd Alba, thank you so much for spending time with us.
Always a treat.
Go listen to his show, 8 to 11, Monday through Friday, civicmedia.us/Todd Alba. Is that the?
Sure. Yeah, sure. That works.
He'll find him. All right. Thanks so much. We will
thanks,
talk
guys.
To you soon, buddy.
Bye-bye.
All right, when we come back, we're going to talk to some representatives from Main Street Alliance about the work they're doing to bolster the small businesses in our state and across the country. This is As Goes Wisconsin. To As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry on the Civic Media Network. No matter where you are listening, thank you for tuning in during your lunch hour. A reminder, if you miss any part of today's show, you can always listen to it as a podcast, which you can find on asgoeswisconsin.com/listen or wherever you find podcasts. And so as we've been spending time partially yesterday, partially today, talking about the very exciting topic of tax policy and who it affects the most and some of the changes, I can't help but think about small businesses and how these policies also affect them, because, you know, big corporations function very differently inside of our tax code than small businesses do. And so, kind of as that is a segue, I thought we'd have folks from Main Street Alliance come on and talk about how to build true small business power and help them organize so they aren't ignored during policy conversations, whether that be healthcare or minimum wage or taxes. And so we've had Sean Fedeplace on before, and he is the Main Street Alliance Midwest Regional Manager based in Madison. So welcome back, Sean. But this time we also are joined by Shauna Kauser, who is the Executive Director of Main Street Alliance Action based in Washington, D.C., and then Corrine Hendrickson, who is a Wisconsin Leadership Team member and owner of Corrine's Little Explorers in New Glarus, Wisconsin. Welcome, everyone, to As Goes Wisconsin.
Thank you so much.
Because it's been a while since Sean was on for the first time, so for our listeners who are unfamiliar, who is Main Street Alliance and what is the mission and what are you working to accomplish?
So Main Street Alliance is a national organization. We organize small business owners on a number of key issues that are prevailing for them. Through our surveys, we find that those issues, you might be surprised, is taken on corporations, concentration of power, organizations like Amazon, disrupts market cultures. We take on healthcare, think about tax fairness and access to capital, along with the care economy. So that's paid leave and childcare and things that hold near and dear to Corrine's heart.
And so how does this end up work? Because, I mean, you know, sometimes when I think about, like, it makes sense to me often when I think about unions and the employing or giving unions giving power to workers because of the power in numbers. And so is that a similar strategy as far as helping small businesses that maybe as they stand alone don't have much power, but if they work together do, whether it's in state legislatures or at the federal level?
That's right, Kristen. That's true of any kind of taking on power, right, in the civic sector. It's interesting because small business owners have power in both market and potential power in civic sector. So if we go back to like our basics with civics, got the government sector, the market culture, and then civics. And that's really small, right? Because we know that market culture has way more power. So what we're trying to do is build relationships across the street. So if I'm a dry cleaner working across the street from Corrine and a childcare worker, there's more power together to think about collective public investments. So things like paid leave, childcare, again, if we organize around that, we can has power, and that happens at the local and state level. Forget about the federal level. And that's why the work that Sean is leading in Wisconsin is so incredible, because we have been able to take on some of those pieces bite by bite.
And so how does, because I've been friends with Sean for now since I think about 2020, but since you work on the in DC and the national level, how many different chapters of Main Street Alliance are working in their own regions or in their own states since Main Street Alliance even its inception?
That's a great question. Main Street Alliance has been around for a while, and we really got a big push nationally after ACA, after a number of small business owners across the country just came to DC. And outside of that, we have a stronger holding, meaning people like Sean, who've been doing some work in Minnesota, Wisconsin, Vermont. We're building out in North Carolina, along with places like Oregon. But then we have kind of incubators, meaning people who run solo without an organizer on the ground, who join our work either through by signing on a letter, coming to testify in a couple of different other states.
And so what makes small business owners, I mean, I have my assumptions, but what makes small business owners a unique group of people to organize with versus, I don't know, workers or bigger organizations, or what is unique about small businesses to you?
Well, I think that they all are important, actually. Like, I think parent organizing around education issues and workers working on labor rights, and small business hasn't in the past had that bigger push around organizing. So I think what makes it, your question is what makes it unique?
Yeah.
I think it makes it unique to think about, hey, it's not just me. I'm not alone here running my, restaurant, and that the potential to think about like what public investments can happen in your city. Oftentimes, I'll start back. My mom ran a small business for about 25 years. She was a custom dressmaker, so she made clothes. And you know, most of a life of a true small business owner, you're either a solopreneur by yourself, or maybe you have a few staff members, under 20. And your job is day to day to keep everybody's mouths fit, including your own. And so that can be isolating. You can feel like this is just my problem, this is my issue. But the potential of small business owners is to say, actually, you actually have economic power in your community. And by having conversations with other small business owners, it doesn't mean a lot. You know, like 5 to 10 can really make some meaningful changes. I mean, we've all been to school board meetings and city council meetings. When there's a hot button issue, people do come out. But the day-to-day to think about, hey, I sit on the chamber, I'm a small business owner, I'm also a community organizer, there's a lot of different self-interests that are there at stake. And so the potential for power to really make some changes, especially thinking about corporate consumption, Kristen, it just makes us all excited. So our job is to find top leaders like Sean and others on our MSA team to make sure that we can identify those who have the angst, the angst to fight. Make sure we are training them with strategies that are winnable. And then thinking about how does this work from a political standpoint, and then have people go out and execute.
Got it. No, and that makes a lot of sense. So tell me, like, shifting a little bit more to the regional area, since we reached Wisconsin on this show, either Corrine or Sean, can you tell me a little bit more about what organizing looks like on the ground in Wisconsin with Main Street Alliance?
You want me to?
Either of you,
yes.
Sorry.
Corrine, if you could kick us off just what that looks like as a member business, that would be great.
Yeah, so kind of piggybacking off of what Shonda was saying is we also are core people that are known in our communities and usually respected and trusted. We have, customers, I have parents, I have, different people that I know. So we can really connect with each other and kind of commiserate about those same types of things. And we really feel like we're not as alone. So for example, as I'm shopping through town, we kind of talk and they know a little bit about me and how I kind of just, let people know, like, different policies and different things that we can do. And really the biggest thing that I have found is it's empowering other people to think and know that they're important. Far too often, like Sean was saying, we're isolated and we just don't think we're important because we don't donate the millions of dollars. We don't go to those fundraisers. We don't, we're not at those types of things. But at the same time, the every single one of those same politicians and legislators will say that small business is what matters. Small business is what runs our communities. But then the policies that they're implementing don't. They actually hurt us more. So for us to kind of get together and talk about how, even though I'm childcare and somebody else is a restaurant, we all have those same needs and we all care deeply about our communities and our customers and our families. And we really want to make sure that our areas thrive, especially in the rural areas when we're just watching everybody leave. And we really want to make sure that people come to us.
Absolutely. And so with, I know Shauna was speaking about some of the bigger issues that on a national level, but like how does that, in the detail of the issues that you're tackling in Wisconsin, how have they played out so far? Has there been movement in anything specific? Or sometimes because I pay enough attention to Wisconsin politics, I would say maybe not. But as far as what has been the most exciting or kind of like issue that has gotten momentum, even if it doesn't mean policy has moved forward, but as far as the energy for it among members of Main Street Alliance in Wisconsin?
Well, yep. So I would say that the biggest one right now that we're getting the most political power and getting the most people together is childcare, because really we're starting to understand that it is the foundation of our economy. There already was a problem, and then COVID hit and, schools shut down, Head Start shut down, businesses were shutting down, everybody was shutting down. Then they're begging us in childcare to stay open without protective equipment, without testing. And we're working with young children who are interfaces. We're constantly getting sick and we're making $10 an hour without benefits. Mm-hmm. So right there, that like all made all of us stiffen our spines really, and just go like start talking to each other and say, this is not okay. We need to change this. We need to make a difference. And, it worked at the federal level first, and we were able to get the American Rescue Plan passed, which was, billions upon billions of dollars. I've been in business for 15 years. I have never received money from the state in addition to like a subsidy, which the parents still pay the difference. So I've never received above and beyond what I charge. And this is the first time. And so this, for example, this last year, they started child care counts, which is every single month using that rescue plan money, I get a stipend. It is one part is to run my business. The other part is to pay myself. I was actually able to hire two substitutes so that they can come in. So if I have a doctor's appointment, I don't have to close. Those parents don't have to get out of work, find somebody else to pick their kids up. And that actually increased my hourly wage from $6 an hour to $12 an hour. So that's huge. Like it doubled my income, still not a lot, but for the 70 hours I work, it doubled my income. So what I'm looking at now is once this money runs out in December, if the state does not pass child care counts in the budget, which in Wisconsin, child care is not in the budget as a line item, which is kind of also another problem, but that without that $300 million that's going to go to continue that program for the following year and a half, I'm going to have to increase my rates 25% or take the pay cut back down to $6 an hour. And I can't, this is the first time in my life that my husband and I and our family have been able to take a vacation and not have to worry about it. Or we've been able to, make sure like a door needed to be replaced. We could do it when it needed to be done because the income was coming and I could budget for it. And so, that's not a way that we should be treating people who are spending their entire, lives with young children, 50 hours a day. And it, people look at me like, wait, people make $10 an hour to watch other people's children, like seven of them. I'm like, yes. And they're like, you couldn't pay me enough to do that. And so when we look at it that way, it's really, it's an insult, and it's an insult to our children. It's an insult to our families, and it's an insult to the educators who work with them. Group centers are looking at the same thing. And this money is not by any means to make us, rich or anything. It's to sustain what we have. There's still empty classrooms. There's still cut hours. And if they don't get this child care counts as well, they're looking at closing their businesses. They're looking at, 20 to 40% increases. And then what? All those parents are going to go to their employers and say, I quit. I can't keep paying this. Or I need a $3, $4, $5 an hour raise in order to keep working here. And so it really will trickle out in all those other businesses that rely on us and our income, and those parents having money in their pockets to go to the restaurants, they won't have that anymore.
The childcare thing to me is that it's such an obvious solution. And so we only have a couple minutes before we have to go to our next commercial break, but is there, shy of policy at the state level, I feel like I've heard different communities coming together and being able to work and make like a co-op of different childcare options. Is that something as like Main Street Alliance is working on as far as other solutions beyond the gridlock that happens in Madison, as far as on the local level, being able to provide more solutions for the small businesses in different communities rather than at the state as a whole.
Hey, Kareem, do you want to talk about the efforts you've made in Greene County trying to get ARPA funds for childcare?
Yep. So in Greene County, we've actually been able to get some WEDC grants, which, again, first time ever invested in childcare. And that was significant. It was, we were able to do professional development to pay our employees and to pay us to take the courses that are required in order to keep our licenses. We were also able to start a mentor program. And with that, we actually got three more people from unregulated into regulated providing care. So it's you can have more children and be legal and all those types of things. But then also, so we lost three family child care providers because they retired. Median age is 52 for family child care, but we gained three more. So we actually had a net zero, and we were also able to do sign-on bonuses and things. And so those group centers were able to hire more people. And so we've been working with our United Way and our workforce, GCDC, which is our workforce development, on getting grants and things like that. And we're working on getting some ARPA funding from the county as well.
Got it. All right. Well, we're going to keep you both through the break. And when we come back, we're going to talk more about the details of the Day of Action that's happening on February 13th at Garver Feed Mill in Madison. And so we are talking to Sean Fedeplace, who is the Main Street Alliance Midwest Regional Manager. Shonda Causer had to drop off, but she's the Executive Director of Main Street Alliance Action. And Corrine Hendrickson, who is the Wisconsin Leadership Team member and owner of Corrine's Little Explorers in New Clarus. All right, we'll be right back. This is As Goes Wisconsin. To As Goes Wisconsin on the Civic Media Network. I am Kristen Bribe. We got Jane Matinere on the board, and we are talking to Main Street Alliance members and leaders, Sean Fedeplace, who is the Midwest Regional Manager, and Corrine Hendrickson, who is the Wisconsin Leadership Team member. And before, we were talking about different policies and priorities for Main Street Alliance, but coming up next month, I think we're probably at like the two-ish week mark, on February 13th at Garver Feed Mill, you all are having a Day of Action. So why don't you tell me a little, tell the audience a little bit more about what that is going to entail?
Yeah, and I can speak to that real quick and then kick it over to Corrine. So Main Street Alliance, we've now been in state for 2.5 years, and we've grown from 0 members to 1,200 members. And the state legislature has actually not been in session a whole lot for that 2.5 years. About 3/4 of it, they were out of session. And so this is our first chance to really bring our members together from all across the state, from La Crosse to Hayward to Green Bay and Door County, down in Milwaukee, then here in central Wisconsin. And we're going to be meeting with our lawmakers and our statewide elected officials, including the governor, lieutenant governor, state treasurer, the various other folks at the statewide level, to advocate on issues like childcare, which is what Corrine was speaking about a little bit ago. Badger care expansion with a public option, something that should have happened years ago and is very much a small business issue. And family medical leave. So we're going to be meeting at Garber Feed Mill. Garber Events is actually a member business. They receive support from the state to help recover from pandemic. So found it appropriate to do the meeting there. And if folks want to find out more about how they can participate, they can go to mainstreetalliance.org, sign up on the website. And we'll be then going up to the Capitol to meet with our lawmakers to make it clear that these investments, childcare, healthcare, paid leave, these are investments in Main Street and small business and need to happen this year as a part of the state budget process. And so I'm super excited to have members come from all across the state. And Corrine, do you want to speak a little bit about why you're going to be joining us on the 13th?
Yeah. So one of the things that I really love about Main Street Alliance is that usually we're in our silos when we go to talk to representatives. We're talking as childcare. We're talking as restaurants. We're talking as, you know, storefronts. We're talking as farmers. But really, all of us have those same things. And by connecting to each other and really supporting each other and showing how interconnected we really are and that we care about those other aspects as well, I feel like we will get a little bit further and maybe have, you know, a better opportunity and chance to really make it clear that these are all Main Street business concerns, and this is what it's going to take for our communities to thrive. Like, I can talk about how, you know, I noticed that a mom is dropping off her baby who is 2 weeks old because they don't have paid family leave. Mm-hmm. They don't have the money. They're dropping off a 2 week old. Mom shouldn't even be going back to work at this point. She's not ready. And, you know, think about you as the employer. You have somebody there that's just not physically and emotionally ready to be there, and their child is somewhere, if they can find childcare also. And then we can, you know, talk about how, you know, employers are not finding any employees because there isn't anybody that's available to work or qualified to work. And that's where it comes in, where I can say, I have a wait list with 5 babies on it right now. I have a wait list with 10 2-year-olds on it right now. There just isn't anybody getting into this business, and this is why. And then really also emphasize that we are a business as well. One of the things that we kept getting pushed back on as a childcare group the last time we tried to get money in the budget 2 years ago was that they weren't hearing from small business owners. We're like, we are small business owners. And so by collectively getting together, this helps kind of make that a cohesive message. And we also can talk about things. So I can talk to the restaurant owners and understand more about their businesses. I can talk more to the, you know, retailers who sell clothing and things, and, you know, discover more and how we can work together and, you know, really find out, is there a need for more second shift or weekend childcare? Is that something that we should be trying to work on together? Things like that.
It's so interesting as far as just the things that you all are seeing firsthand and the commonalities, even though the businesses might be totally different and the same obstacles that everyone is facing. And so is there ever, as you, whether it's Sean or Kareen, as far as recruitment or in growing from 0 to 1,200 members, is there pushback? Is there reasons why like small businesses don't buy into the agenda that you guys are trying to help them help themselves? And like, what is kind of the reception always been as far as, because to me, this sounds like a no-brainer as far as being a part of this alliance. And so what is some of the reasons why you've ever come across people not wanting to be a part of this? Or is it just lack of awareness?
I'll just speak to my experience. And I would say that there's been a real untapped network of small business owners across the state who don't agree with groups like the State Chamber of Commerce, WMC, and the Tavern League, and don't really feel that those organizations reflect their values, because they simply don't. And so, you know, for us, I think part of the reason why we've grown as the way we have is because, A, there was a huge group of people who already wanted something like us to exist in the state, and it just didn't exist yet. And so bringing folks together in that way, I know myself, over the course of the last 2 years, 2.5 years, I've conducted 2,000 one-on-ones over that time period. Wow. So 2,000 separate meetings, and that's the work, right? I know Kareen does that in her neck of the woods too, talking to local leaders, and she just organized a house meeting at her childcare center just this last week, bringing folks together who she had personally recruited. And so, you know, I think part of the reason why we've been able to grow is because both we've identified really strong leaders who've helped us do so. I think it's by doing the work. And it's also by really building power, but affecting change. I mean, our state provided $1.3 billion to small business during the course of the pandemic. And I think that is partially due to the work that we've done organizing small businesses all across the state. You look at Minnesota in comparison, they did $98 million. $1.3 billion versus $98 million. And I believe that's because, you know, we pushed very hard to make sure that the state was prioritizing the small business voices and making sure that Main Streets across our state survived. So, you know, I think that, you know, for the most part, people agree with our, I mean, if you look at our issues, magic care expansion, paid mm-hmm. leave, childcare, these are things that like 70% of people agree with. And, you know, for us, it's about how do we make the case to the state legislature, both Democrats and Republicans, that these are pro small business, pro Main Street policies.
So we only have a minute left, but for anyone listening who would like to help take action with Main Street Alliance, and if they're interested in doing that, how can they do so?
Go to mainstreetalliance.org. You can become a member. You can also find out our upcoming events, both via Zoom, but also our Day of Action information is there as well. That's mainstreetalliance.org. And join us. It's going to be a great time. It's a good opportunity to take action. And, you know, it's a good way to make a difference for small business in Main Street all across our state.
Awesome. Well, Sean Vettaplace and Kareen Hendrickson, thank you so much for spending time with us today. We will link all of the information on our show notes on today's show blog. But thank you. And I'm looking forward to hearing how the Day of Action goes.
Thank you so much.
All right. Well, we're gonna go to the top of the hour news, and when we come back, a woman who knows about brewing beer, because I am only a woman who knows about drinking beer. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Thank you for listening to As Goes Wisconsin, available on Spotify, Apple, Google, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Please subscribe and leave us a rating. As Goes Wisconsin is a product of Civic Media and airs live across Wisconsin Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Civic Media is a statewide network of radio stations broadcasting local news, local sports, thoughtful commentary, and hand-picked music. We are always streaming on the Civic Media app. Find out where you can listen on the air or learn more about Civic Media and sponsorship opportunities by going to our website, civicmedia.us. We thank you for listening.